for 77-7011 by Satellite. It's Video Games Hot Dog. I'm Zach.
I'm Riff.
And I'm Kevin.
And we're here bringing you some Video Games Hot Dog. We're trying something a little new. Kevin and I are lashed together by a single headset on which we are the phone.
A headset with it's a in-ear like iPhone headphones kind of thing. It's not a single headset where our heads are like smashed together like
no, it's like old school 70s headphones where we're ear to ear.
Yeah.
With giant cups over the other ears.
We have strung a can with two strings. No, wait. We've got two cans and a string between San Diego and Arizona.
So you're manning the cans.
We are manning the cans, yes.
Oh, yeah, man. This is the first show we've done without Kevin uselessly listening to headphones and twitching with knobs in a way that makes me angry.
I'm going to argue that the levels are probably not as good.
Yeah, you're probably right. So, how you guys been? What have you guys been up to? It's been a week since our last Video Games Hot Dog. Riff, what have you been doing?
I've been mainly. I've still been playing video games.
You're not allowed to talk about video games in this segment, aren't you? Aren't you looking at the agenda?
I ate some hummus today.
You ate some hummus?
Yeah.
Was it good?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Wait, are you eating our hummus while we're out of town?
No, I'd buy my own hummus, man.
Yeah, you bought like a massive stockpile of hummus.
I buy a lot of, I don't know, is it possible to eat too much hummus? Is it unhealthy for like almost all of my meals to be hummus at this point?
Well, there's not a lot of fiber in hummus, so you might have some like
digestion
issues. Bread is also not fiber. You need something that is not
fiber
processed.
In bread?
Hummus and celery.
Is it
whole wheat bread?
Are you allergic to celery?
No, I just hate it.
All right, so guys, I hate to start off Video Games Hot Dog on a serious note because fuck knows that's not what we're all about. But I kind of want to talk about something. I was reading the Something Awful forum because I like to read that so that I can see when people say that Kevin isn't funny because that reinforces my worldview.
Uh-huh.
So somebody posted in there, and this is a real thing. They said, "I am surprised to hear them casually throwing around the word gay as a pejorative." And they were like, you know, that seems very like 10 years ago. And then there was some discussion about like, you know, well, or what you're saying, it's surprising that the Kingdom of Loathing guys have an infantile sense of humor and are behind the times. And I read that. And it legitimately put me in a kind of soul searching mode. No, it wasn't a tizzy. Like it made me a little sad. Like I became pensive and thoughtful.
Uh-huh.
And I got to thinking about this. The sort of like short version of the story is like, yeah, we should probably watch that. I don't know which one of us so I will definitely make a lot of
long
jokes.
Form
yeah,
gay
a bunch
jokes.
Of long form gay jokes, right? And I'm not going to stop doing that, certainly. But so Josh will often talk about Joshua, who I do some other podcasts with, how
because you don't
he
do
and
enough
I,
podcasts.
He and I are going to be the guys in the nursing home that are like your adorable racist grandpa, except we're going to be calling the male nurse who's wiping our ass a fag because he's touching our asses, and we're going to be doing it in the spirit of camaraderie and ribbing with the guy, ribbing for his pleasure, of course. But so I got to thinking about this, right? So your grandfather, just racist, and it's a product of the time that he was in, and it's like okay, right?
Is it the time when race was becoming less of a day-to-day issue? I mean, I guess it probably still is a day-to-day issue for a lot of people, but
well, what I
it's
what
not
I was
the, like primary thing or
where
what?
I was going was so your dad,
yeah.
Knows not to be a racist, knows that racism is bad,
yeah.
But still...
He hates fat people.
In private company, will tell racist jokes.
Have you hung out with my dad?
I have not hung out with your dad. I hung out with my dad. Well, I'm talking about my dad. I don't know. My grandpa died when I was two, so I don't know if he was openly racist, but he might have been. My dad, not openly racist, would still tell racist jokes in private company.
Okay.
So I think where we've gotten to is that we are not openly homophobic. We are not at all homophobic, right? But we'll still toss that kind of stuff around as a sort of a rhetorical device.
I definitely hear that used on every male, like every podcast that I listen to that is just males, it is used all the time. Like,
yeah.
without exception. I mean, I don't listen to Overthinking It. Maybe they're above it. But.
Oh, they are absolutely above it. So. And that's the thing. Like, I feel like in general, enlightened society is above it. And here's what I got to.
But like, talking about like, you know, sort of slipping into like sucking each other's cocks or whatever as just sort of a turn of phrase, it happens all the time in every podcast I was into, which is almost all guys.
I think you need to make the distinction between like a frat boy calling somebody he doesn't like a fag and you making jokes about Kevin being bisexual or whatever. It's an entirely different context and intent.
Well, but I mean, I think what I do is almost worse. I don't even know. I don't know which of us they're talking about. I'm just assuming it's me, and I'm taking the blame for it.
And I'm sure that I, like, every now and then, whether it's on the podcast or not, I will drop, you know, I will use the word gay and have
to mean lame, which also doesn't mean lame. But I mean, that is like the retarded.
I use retarded, which is probably non-PC. But you know, it's.
Yeah. I'm bad at that in some ways. And here's what I thought of. None of us would do this in writing in our professional lives, right? Like, we would not put a joke into Kingdom of Loathing where a character says, "Wow, that shit is as gay as it is retarded, and boy is it retarded."
That's an excellent point.
So that shit is gay. And this podcast was born
a verbal crutch.
This podcast was born of our other podcasts, which started out as radio shows, which were extremely informal.
Yeah.
And if I thought of this as a thing that was being recorded for public consumption, if I honestly thought about the stadium full of people that listen to this,
they don't listen to it all at the same time, like on a loudspeaker, because that would be creepy.
I would think of this as a thing that was being put out for public consumption, and I would think of it as a thing that we should probably put more thought into maintaining a more professional tone with.
Eh.
I think that one step down that road is one step closer to 100 steps down that road, and that is a road that makes this impossible to listen to because it just wouldn't be any good if we were
being really uptight about
what we were saying. That said, reading those comments made me think, you know, so something that I will often go back to as a mental defense, as a reassurance of my position. And I don't want to get into this. I don't want to get into the argument that I've gotten into with a bunch of people a bunch of different times about whether saying that shit is gay is actually harmful to gays, because it's immaterial, right? Like,
it probably is and isn't at the same
society
time.
Gets to decide what words mean, and we, as people who care about language, acknowledge that language is a living thing, right? The we can argue until we're blue in the face that, you know what, you're using nonplussed incorrectly, but people have decided that nonplussed means the opposite of what it means, and it's not the first time that that's happened to a word, and it won't be the last time that that's happened.
Subtle tangent. Did you see one of the recent XKCDs where it was just a string of like coined sort of neologisms, which are kind of annoying to people who care about language, but they're all kind of words, and it was a sentence that was kind of painful to listen to, but made you know, some sort of like sense, and that's how language works.
So we don't get to decide. We don't get to decide whether that's a thing that you can say or not. And so after reading these comments and thinking about it, I thought, you know, that's probably something that we ought to work on. But then this guy posted to our Twitter. He posted a response that was like, "Casually using the word gay as a pejorative is a surefire way to get me to stop listening to a podcast. Smell you later, video games hot dog." To which I thought, fuck you, faggot. Because seriously,
man, like, fuck him for using the phrase "smell you later."
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, if we're talking about being stuck in 10 years ago, how about you get some new jokes instead of just reading Bart Simpson shirts from the 80s? What I'm saying is, thank you, Something Awful Forums, for leveling this criticism that actually made me think about, you know, think about the way that we do things. And like I said, I'm not going to have the argument about whether that's actually a bad thing to say, but I will acknowledge that if I did have that argument, I would almost certainly be wrong. And
you do like to be wrong.
Well, you know, it's
if being wrong is wrong, you don't want to be right.
If you can't be with the one you love the one you're with, right? Sure. I don't like being wrong, but I'm wrong so often that I've just decided to be happy. I've made peace with, you know, it's this thing that happens to me with all of my political opinions and I'm sure that a lot of people, you know, like when I listen to like Adam Carolla, every once in a while he says something and I'm like, oh God, I wince at an opinion. And I'm sure that people feel like that about the shit that I say, like, yeah, all the time, right?
I mean, anytime you and I have an argument, people are just like, oh, he is so wrong.
Me, about me.
Yeah.
They don't think that you're wrong.
Oh, I mean, no, because I'm always right.
You know, you grew up with some money and you went to an Ivy League school.
Exactly.
So
and I'm white and I'm male.
Be wrong?
I mean, yeah, I am part of the established patriarchy.
Yeah,
come
but
on.
What's weird is that all of those NASCAR fans are also white and male. And see, that's the
They
that's
didn't
the
grow
problem.
Up with money.
That's where, okay, growing up with money. Yeah. Growing up with money is the difference. Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. Like,
upper class,
a different
white,
take on
male of privilege. Yeah. No, I've just got it all, so how could I possibly be wrong?
Yeah, but it's that whole problem, the walking contradiction that is me, the set of circumstances that led, I grew up among hillbillies.
And you're half and Chinese and half Mexican.
My marginal amount of enlightenment has made it so everybody that I grew up around thinks that I'm a crazy faggot, and everybody everybody that is enlightened and lives in San Francisco and is in the, you know, is like a modern sort
thinks
of Democrat thinks that I am an insufferable, bigoted hillbilly.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, you know what, I'll be over here making stuff while you complain about words.
By and large what I think
about that, and so that's the position that I come from. But then so another thing that comes up a lot is we talk about, like, and this comes back to video games. Remember video games, guys? That's what we talk
I
about
remember
on this show.
Video games.
No.
There's another, you know, there was another news story where it was like,
those
hey,
are,
Orson
those are
Scott,
for girls.
Orson Scott Card is writing the story for this new video game. And so be sure to flip the fuck out about this in the comments, because Orson Scott Card hates fags. But, like, you know what? In all of the video games that I've played that Orson Scott Card has written the story for, none of them had, like, a level where you have to kill a bunch of fags, right? So it is definitely possible, no matter how outmoded and offensive your sort of day-to-day things that you believe and say and do are, to have a professional life in which that's not a factor.
People,
I argue for that all the time.
People will avoid reading Ender's Game because of Card's political beliefs.
And that's terrible. That's just terrible. That's
it's
a terrible.
It's unfortunate. It's really unfortunate.
I mean, it's, you know, like well, you know, Wagner was a Nazi, so let's not listen to any Wagner. No, let's listen to Wagner because it's fucking amazing, right? I mean, like, I guarantee that everybody that has ever made anything that you like has some opinion that you disagree with, right? So, like, that said, it makes me want to be a better podcaster.
Yeah.
It makes
I appreciate that.
I feel like the criticism on the Something Awful forum, it was one well-reasoned post that was just an observation. It wasn't accusatory, and what it wasn't was
fucking, they weren't rage quitting. Yeah.
God, that drives me crazy. It's like your upstairs neighbor invites you to a party, and you go up to the party, and you're like, wow, this party really fucking sucks. And you go over to his whiteboard and write, your party is bullshit. All the girls here are fat. You should have gotten better snacks. But then you stay there and keep drinking his beer. Maybe that guy actually at least stopped listening to the podcast, in which case, like, thank you for saving us. Thank you for saving us the little bit of bandwidth it cost there. Anyway, that's what I've been doing for the last week, is thinking about this. And I'm sorry, and I'm gonna try to use gay as a pejorative casually less. In general. And I hope that you guys do too, or you're fired.
Can I keep calling things retarded?
If you want to. I John C. McGinley doesn't like it when you do that.
Yeah, that's definitely my go-to phrase. And I'm probably a bad person.
You know, I am kind of curious. We also got into this argument, me and Josh, about, like, whether we should ban player names that had 7-7 in them.
What is that in reference to?
Well, in a certain from a certain point of view, from a certain point of view, it's
John Elway
seven,
twice.
Seven is the H-th letter of the alphabet.
And oh, so, it was like
so
Heil
is
Hitler.
Some Heil Hitler thing, right? But it's like,
but isn't 77 also a year when some of us were born?
Yeah. Not me.
I was.
Yeah, well, you're a young whippersnapper. See, that's the other thing. We're old as shit. In fact, tomorrow, I officially pass into the demographic that nobody gives a shit about.
Aww.
Tomorrow, I'm old.
Oh, shit. That means we're going to pay more for insurance. Oh,
man, that sucks. That sucks.
Damn,
our insurance.
You're costing us more money now.
All right, well.
I guess I'll quit.
It's time for you to go into the... You guys will go out to pasture.
Well,
you're going to put me to stud.
Suicide booth. Is
too late. Oh. Wow, that was a different direction entirely.
It's like Logan's Run plus five.
Did your palm crystal turn black?
It's got hair on it. I don't know what that means.
All right, so that's what we've been doing.
That's what I've been doing for a week. Riff, you've nothing but video games. You looked at some dirt.
I watched The Thing.
John
movie.
Carpenter's The Thing?
Yeah, John Carpenter's.
Oh, wow.
I was trying to think of the name John Carpenter, but all I could think of was Cameron, and that wasn't right.
Kirk Cameron.
Yeah.
Cameron Crowe.
Yeah. You told me about that and led me to make the joke, John Carpenter's The Thing, wherein we'll catch the conscience of the king.
Yeah, yeah.
How was it, Riff?
It was pretty good. It was a lot grislier and gorier than I expected it to be. Pretty gross, but it also had Wilford Brimley in it.
Oh, I'm thinking of The Blob. I'm not thinking of The Thing at all. The Thing is the one in the research station in like Alaska or something, or
yeah, some Antarctica,
cold place,
yeah.
Antarctica. Okay.
Yeah, and it's all like, you know, there's an alien that has the ability to replicate people perfectly. So it's all the guys in the station are paranoid because they don't know which one of them is an alien.
Right.
It was pretty good.
Yeah, no, I remember seeing that a long time ago and enjoyed it quite a bit.
I was motivated to watch it because the H.P. Lovecraft literary podcast just did At the Mountains of Madness, which his name isn't Cameron, but what was his name?
John Carpenter?
John Carpenter.
Wow, you literally couldn't remember that from like
I could not remember it
ago.
For that amount of time. But yeah, John Carpenter was heavily influenced by that story when he did
Did
the
he
thing.
Make that remake movie of The Mountains of Madness? Or wait, that was In the Mouth of Madness? It had Sam Neill.
That I don't know.
Children. Wait, I'm thinking of Village of the Damned with Christopher Reeves before he was paralyzed.
Was he in
I don't
that?
Even know what's going on, man.
No, I didn't know.
No. Horror movies, man. Natural Born Killers.
Huh.
I'm thinking of movies I watched in 1995.
All right.
Come on, guys. Help me out here. Did I mention I'm old as shit?
The Crow? When did that come out?
That was probably around then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good job, right. Riff.
Yeah, whee!
I think I was
only able to guess that one because I wrote a bunch of it into the game recently.
Really? The Crow itself?
Yeah, well, all the objects and the familiar relating to the Crow that we had to put in for the Bees Hate You path are all references to that movie.
I see.
Hmm. Do you think anybody got it, Riff?
Oh, probably.
Was it about the main character getting killed
they
halfway
weren't really
through and
obscure.
Replaced by a special effects version of himself? Only it was like Jurassic Park.
I think
Park
I might have mentioned
so
that.
His face was actually a dinosaur.
His face was actually Trent Reznor.
Okay. Well, that's enough for that segment, guys.
Good
Sweet.
Segment, bro.
Hey, guys, what have you been playing?
I've been playing a bunch of stuff, actually. I mean, not most of it, not for very long, but I downloaded like a million different $3 discounted games from the Steam sale.
If this comes out in time and the Steam sale is still going on, all of our listeners should go and like get all kinds of crazy games. Because I bought like five or six games in 2 days, and was just afraid to go back because I was afraid I'd buy more games.
Well, because you were afraid you would spend $10 more.
Well, no, I know. It's just, like, I already have, like, 15 or 20 games on Steam that I've never even downloaded or played, and I'm just acquiring more and more and more.
I wonder what would happen if you had a button that you could set up Steam to up to 5 times a day buy any game that was less than $5.
I
wonder what would happen to you.
I bought a game for $1. I bought a bunch of $3 games. Like,
did you then say in RoboCop fashion, I'd buy that for a dollar? Yeah.
No, I didn't.
Serve the public trust. Don't step in puddles, walk around.
Please build a statue of me in Detroit.
Oh, man. This condo that we're in San Diego in preparation for Comic-Con in a couple of weeks, if you stand on the stairway and talk, you sound like a robot.
Huh,
it's like
sweet.
Crazy little echo chamber. And so every time I walk up, if I'm like going upstairs to poop, I'm like defecation protocol initialized. And it's like sweet. It's like a sweet poop robot making a declaration of his intent to poop.
Cool.
Anyway, Riff, what have you been playing?
Let's see. I played, we talked about this for a little bit, previously, Tiny Bang Story, when I played the demo, but I went and bought it off Steam. It was sort of a point-and-click, find-the-hidden-object, looks-like-machinarium game. That's pretty good if you're into finding hidden objects.
Did you guys actually play Machinarium?
I beat it.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay, I played through 4 or 5 screens and lost interest.
Yeah, no, I bought it and I enjoyed it quite a bit. Yeah,
I got into a cart that was rolling and went into a door. I remember that.
Yeah, that's relatively
Once
early.
It got to the point where you were walking through multiple rooms, I was like, this is too complicated.
It branches a lot, and you can definitely traverse 15 or 20 screens, I think.
Yeah, opens up a bit, yeah.
Yeah, so there's definitely a lot of expansiveness that some of the previous games, but like I did not have.
See, that game was really pretty, and I'm glad that I bought it, but I feel like, you know what, at that point I've done my part. I'm glad that this exists for the people who are into it, and I paid for it.
I've bought all of Beethoven's symphonies, but I haven't listened to them, because, you know, I just wanted to support the artist.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, well, speaking of which, I also bought the soundtrack to Machinarium. I use that for work music a lot because it's all instrumental. So that's good stuff.
Cool.
Yeah,
I always listen to the Amelie soundtrack while I'm working. I feel like it puts me in that, like, I'm going to try to make something that's depressing enough to be featured on This American Life.
Yeah, I've got, like, the soundtracks to Machinarium and Aeon Flux and one other thing that I can't remember offhand, but they're all really good working.
I also
music.
Listen to Franz Liszt's Hungarian Rhapsodies.
I like his piano concertos.
Probably the thing I played most this past week actually wasn't a Steam game. It's Avedon the Black Fortress, which is PC, Mac, and iPad. The guy Jeff Vogel that does Spiderweb Software, he's been doing been doing these games since like 1994. This is his newest hit. It's pretty sweet. It's
like isometric RPG.
Yeah, like the later Ultima games, basically turn-based combat, just walking around exploring. They're pretty good. The graphics are not great. I mean, they're like sufficient, but where these games really shine is in the writing. His characters and stories are all really well-rounded, and there's always a lot of very tricky moral choice. He doesn't do the typical video game moral choice like Infamous does.
Right. Do you want to save this kitten?
Yeah, you're
or
either
rape
Hitler
it?
Or Gandhi. Yeah. No, in the Spiderweb Software games, there's always like multiple factions, and it's about impossible to say that any of them is good or evil, and you end up making a lot of really difficult choices of which faction you're going to side with, and lots of politics and intrigue and treachery, and it's just very mature in the actual sense of the word and not in video
so
games.
A lot of,
for
a lot of boobs is what you're saying.
That guy is, he wrote a blog, he had a baby, and he wrote, like, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, that
8
was,
or 9
that
years
was
ago,
a
he wrote,
pretty
he wrote
hilarious
a blog,
blog
about having a baby. It was great.
Was there a lot of boobs in
it's
the
called
it
The Story,
it,
the
he
story
compiled
about
it,
the baby, I think is what it is.
Yeah, he compiled it into a book that got published, and I bought it for a friend of mine when he had a kid.
Did they then make a movie about him getting a book deal out of his blog?
He was. It was very important that his baby's first photograph be good, so he put the baby on a broiler tray surrounded by vegetables.
Yeah,
took a picture of it.
I feel like some of my other friends have done that too.
Yeah,
that's
probably
that
inspired
same.
By this dude. Could yeah, be. No, that's cool. What struck me the other day is that, like, you know what? I'll bet selling his games on the iPad has suddenly made it so that guy's making a bunch of money that he wasn't making before. Because he's been making enough money to just sit in a house and make video games by himself for a really long time. Like, he was like, you know, like before we got started, I was like, wow, that's great. It's great that guy can do that. Like, that's a thing that I find really inspiring. I have a feeling that publishing his games for iOS is probably making him more money than he was making before.
I would hope so. But
almost certainly.
Just because you're on a different platform doesn't necessarily guarantee that those games are selling, right? Like,
well, yeah, that's true.
I
mean, people have
having,
to hear about them.
Having a high rated thing in the iOS RPG section is probably better than having a really well. A critically well accepted indie RPG on the PC.
I don't know. The iOS is
that marketplace
really,
is super crowded and crazy.
It's really crowded. So
you know,
it's hard to know.
I'm curious. Maybe we could ask him.
It's true.
Yeah.
Let's say, hey,
so,
Jeff Fogel.
What have you been playing, Zach?
Wait, is Rift done?
Yeah, I think so.
No, I mean, I don't really have anything else to talk about. I mean, I played some of Realm of the Mad God. Have you heard of that one?
Yeah, it was linked on Penny Arcade. I think everybody's heard of it now.
Yeah, so played a little of that, and that was kind of chaotic and fun, and I nearly gave the money and then decided I'm probably not going to play any more of it after I finish playing it today, and that turned out to be correct.
I played it and didn't actually sign up for an account. There's a flash game where you move around and shoot some shit and level up is appealing to me, but I've been doing a lot of that lately, and so we were having a discussion at dinner wherein I said I really hope that Diablo 3, I have no doubt that it is going to be a very good game, but I hope that it gets a hold of me. That allows me to really enjoy it, because
it's possible that also has less to do with the game and more to do with like where you are.
Oh, absolutely.
At the moment that it comes out.
Yeah, I mean that's exactly what I mean, right? Like it's like everybody's favorite Tony Hawk game is whatever the first Tony Hawk game they played was, and everyone since then is like, this is either too complicated or not complicated enough or whatever. I mean, you play it and you're like, wow, this is awesome. But what you are seeing is just whatever is the current iteration of this awesome formula. Right?
It's like it's like with Mystery Science Theater 3000, the people that grew up with their first experience of it being the Joel episodes think Mike is a terrible host, and the people that their first episodes were Mike episodes think Joel is a terrible host. And they will never reach an agreement.
And never the twain shall meet.
Mm. Yep.
I mean, is that the division that is the Rift Tracks versus Titanic? What is it?
Cinematic Titanic. I feel like that was more them struggling to find a voice in a post MST3K world, right? Like,
but it's two distinct camps of.
It's not though, like, because
I thought so. I haven't paid attention to the politics.
I think that Kevin Murphy and Cameron Crowe are both. involved in both of those. I don't know for sure.
Yeah, I don't either.
I think they are separate crews.
Huh.
Yeah, I didn't
or
think
they
any
were
overlap,
when I
but...
when I first heard about Cinematic Titanic, it was totally the other crew doing it. They may have done some crossover since then.
The thing with the cinematic Titanic is they took a leaf from the script of Titanic's book, and they begin and end every sentence with the name of the character that they're talking
That's
to.
That's true.
So it's like, Crow, they should have sent a poet, Crow. And it gets really tedious. What have I been playing? I played a game that I don't remember the name of, but I know it's on your list. The tower defense game by the Don't Shit Your Pants guys. It's called Portal Co-op.
Villainous.
It's called Villainous.
Jesus.
You're bad at pointing at things.
Apparently.
Yeah, well, I think the post-it moved as I picked it up.
Yeah. So Villainous, it is every once in a while somebody will take a game formula and they will reverse it and be like, look at me, I reversed this game formula. And
like when all the Tetris blocks are going up.
Oh, I was gonna say now I am a Tetris block and I'm trying to like get into a groove.
You are 50 asteroids trying to blow up a ship. but in this case, like I want to subscribe to these dudes' newsletter. Don't Shit Your Pants was a fucking awesome game.
It was good.
And it was very simple and it was very crude, but it was like, you know, like they did this as well as it was possible to make it.
They had like 10 or 12 different ways to not shit your pants.
And like achievements, and they were all fair.
And all of them were
things that you could, they were all things that you could figure out. Like it was, Don't Shit Your Pants is just a great game. Yep. And I feel bad for all the people who dismiss it because it's called Don't Shit Your Pants and it's a game about not shitting your pants, right?
I still haven't played it. I'm going to have to write that down.
It is really good.
I have yet to play. I have one day. I started.
I Have One Day is great. I appreciated both the puzzles and the way that they let you skip past the puzzles once you'd solve them and were playing through the game a second time or trying to figure out like restart or whatever. Like, just a bunch of very clever mechanisms, and the writing was good, and the overall puzzle was fun, and like, yeah, it was just good. It was just really, really well crafted.
So they've gone in a pretty different direction. I mean, this doesn't look like those games, and then it's not all
pixely.
Yeah,
totally
different. It's just very much a like, you know, sort of like high res pixel art flash tower defense game, except you are sending the creeps instead of manning the towers, and you have a few spells that you can cast. And it's just very, you know, it's very level uppy. It's very.
You get to design the waves of creeps, which is something that I feel like I've not gotten to do in other reverse tower defense games, which I like a lot.
I don't know that I've ever played another reverse tower defense game. Like.
Yeah, that's
I saw something on Steam that looked like that was what it was, but I cannot remember the name of it.
You know, this got pretty grindy. Like, there was a point in the middle where I was like, you know what, I want to keep playing this, but I'm not enjoying it. So I figured out a way to like, all right, I'm just gonna queue up a bunch of dudes, and then I'm gonna tab out and do some work while this level finishes.
Oh, interesting.
And get stuff, you know, not as fast as I get. So there are games, and I've noticed this in a lot of stuff on Kongregate. There are games where people realize, I think, halfway through the development of this game, that the way to play it is to just start something and then sort of AFK and let the level finish itself. And so they will build things into it to make it so you're rewarded for paying attention to it. Like in this, you create these creeps.
Oh, interesting.
You create these creeps and send them down this path, and they cycle through until they all get killed. But when they get killed, they shit out a bunch of stuff that you have to mouse over to pick up. There was a game that I think was probably, if I had found it at a different point in my life, I would have really enjoyed it. It was another game on Kongregate about, like, you were some aliens that were invading Earth, and you did so by moving this, like, sort of StarCraft Overlord thing around and dropping different units, and you got, like, DNA that you used to upgrade units and unlock new units and stuff. And they did a similar thing where it's like, all right, well, the way to win this game is to just, like, shit out a bunch of dudes, tab out, let the level play itself out so you get the points, and then go in and get the upgrades. But they made it so most of your upgrades you get by, like, moving your dude over and picking up this thing that appears in the middle of the screen when you kill a guy.
So do you think that's in response to people tabbing out and, like, ignoring it? Or do you think it's in response to Here, the player isn't doing anything, so let's give them a task.
I think it's the same thing either way, right? I mean, I think either way it's kind of sloppy. I mean, I don't want to say that Villainous or Portal Co-op or whatever this is called is like a fundamentally flawed game, and they had to do this to make it so it was worth actually watching what was happening on the screen. But like, in a way, maybe it is, right? Like, in a way, maybe it's... while there is a lot of value in games where you do some shit and then watch what happens, right? Like, in a Sim City, in a Dwarf Fortress, there is a certain time scale, there is a certain immediacy that you want from, like, a level-based and upgrade-based game that is not served by that fire and forget.
So this game has a bunch of stuff for you to do early in the game where you're like casting spells and you're like actively involved in sort of the progression of stuff. But eventually the cost of the spells gets so high that you can't cast anymore, or you sort of run out of resources. And I think at that point, there's really nothing for you to do except for watch this whole thing sort of unfold. And that's at the point where you now have to sort of mouse over dead units because they start getting picked off.
And I wonder.
So I think that just came out of like trying to fill that sort of activity void.
I wonder if it wouldn't have been better served by just adjusting the curve of the way that things cost, right? Like, why? So you're engaged at the beginning, you're engaged at the end, but there's this part in the middle where you're tempted to just tab out and let the game play itself. Like, make that part not exist, right?
Having spent a bunch of my time in the past couple of weeks or months, like doing a bunch of math for these kinds of scenarios,
I think it's
really hard. And you know, for certain systems, it may not. I just don't think it's possible necessarily. You know, like.
But I mean, I wonder if those are. I wonder if that just means that those are fundamentally bad systems.
Maybe.
Right.
Maybe.
Because there's never a point in Super Mario Brothers when you're bored with jumping, right? I mean, they.
Sure.
There are no levels in Super Mario Brothers where you're just on autopilot. Like, it gets progressively more difficult.
It is not a strategic game.
It is not. But you know what I mean. You could generalize those lessons out to whatever, right? I mean,
I didn't get to the point where I was ever bored with Villainous. I also played that a fair bit this week. And
did you get 100% of all of everything?
No, I haven't.
See, I did, and that's part of it. Was my drive to get 100% of everything made me grind out a lot of stuff on lower levels that I didn't
have
to.
I've only played through like half of the game at this point and was enjoying it, but I mean so I could sort of see what you're saying, but like I think that might be a fault in you, in like your goal, your 100% completionist goal, sort of not in line with their just finish the game already kind of
sure
mindset.
But I had an achievement for getting 100% of everything.
Oh, did they? Okay. Yeah. Then maybe I'm wrong.
You get a vial of dragon tears in your throne room or something. It had this my favorite thing about Civilization One was
the
your
palace.
Castle.
Yeah.
Your palace that got bigger as you and,
oh
and,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
What a lame thing to be my favorite thing about Civilization One.
It was pretty cool.
Like, it was pretty cool.
I felt like it never seemed to me like obvious when I would get a palace piece.
Oh, in Villainous?
No. In Civilization. And so
I don't remember. That was so long ago.
And I was always really nervous about it because, like, if I didn't get a palace piece, like, was I going to have a complete and, like, really awesome palace of the style that I wanted by the end of the game or not? Like, I remember being, like, all nervous about that.
You were a high-strung kid.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
Finished Portal Co-op?
Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
Fucking great.
Yeah.
Riff, sure you did that a while ago, didn't you?
Yeah.
We only just got around to finishing it. It was like, I wish that there were harder levels to play, and I think that there will be. I hope
there's been a lot of fan created levels released just recently. I don't know what the quality of them is.
I hope that a co-op level set bubbles to the surface as like a sort of a canonical, like, this is what you should play after you played these co-op levels, because they were. And this was kind of the same way that I felt about Portal 2 in general. Like, it's like, all right, you've gotten this just at the threshold where I think everyone can beat it, and everybody feels like a little bit smart for solving these puzzles, right? But everybody can solve it. And there did I pointed at something in this run through. I tried to not ever talk to you about any of the puzzles.
Yeah, we didn't. I don't.
And,
think.
Yeah. So in the second level, we were not like in the first one. Every once in a while, we'd be like, "I think you need to go back up there or whatever." Yeah. But I wanted to see if I felt it would be a more pure experience if we never actually.
There was one point where I was like, "Just come to the end already," because like you were in a corner and
I couldn't see what was going on. I didn't realize we had.
You mean
solved
you were
the level.
You wanted to do it entirely with the pings?
I wanted to do it entirely within the fiction of the game.
Yeah.
And it was basically it.
And it was there were like a lot of these puzzles, like I was like just completely lost and Zach would solve them, I think Zach was kind of completely lost and I would figure out what was going on. Like there was, it seemed a lot more one sided in this.
And it did keep
through.
Switching back and forth,
yeah,
which was, I mean, and I think we were in the harder stuff, right? Like yeah. We had played up through the, I forget where we were. We got to the excursion.
The end of the third of the
done three-fifths,
yeah.
And then we did the last two-fifths in this last couple of playthroughs. But one thing that I noticed was at one point there was a puzzle that we had already, there was an obstacle that we had already overcome. And when we got killed on a later obstacle, it just plastered over the first obstacle. I pointed this out to you with one of the pings as we were floating past it. In it was one of the sections later on where you're going sort of outside the rooms in the excursion tunnels, and there was a bay that had turrets in it that were shooting at us. That you in the first time you went through it, you had to do one of the pathways across in front of the turrets so that they wouldn't shoot you. And after the like second time we got killed just past that, it just put a vent over those and the turrets weren't there anymore.
Huh.
It did a bunch of stuff. Like I feel like Portal 2.
I don't
2,
remember that at all.
Portal 2
yeah,
did a
I
bunch
never
of
noticed
stuff.
That.
I'm not sure that you would. I was just like, wait a minute. Last time we went through here, there were guys shooting at us out of that hole.
Are you sure that, cause there was a point where you were pointing to something and I was like, no. Cause like what I had to create a wall to knock them off of a conveyor belt as they were coming out of a hole.
That was later in that same level. There was a point where there were some fixed stationary turrets that you couldn't get rid of that were in a bay that were just, at one point you had to toss a portal. Whoever hadn't thrown the excursion portal had to toss a portal to block the guns. And the game just corrected that for you.
Huh.
The game just eliminated that obstacle. It was like our buddy Dave was talking about in going through the developer commentary. There's a point where you have to go out in one of those funnels for a while and then shoot another portal lower so that you fall out of the way of a thing that's going to crush you. And it doesn't let you fuck that up. If you throw the wrong portal, it pretends that you threw the right one. Which seemed to me very dissatisfying and very inelegant, like from a like an overarching perspective, right? But like from a player's perspective, it's like, you know, why make them reload and start that puzzle over?
I think
they
the commenter
clicked the wrong mouse
did button. Say that that was the only place that they ended up doing that too.
Yeah, which, you know, I mean, that's okay. Anyway, I was really happy with what, and you know, maybe I imagined that, maybe that wasn't a real thing, but I was like pleased to have noted that. I'm like, wow, that you know, the only reason they did that was to eliminate some tedium in a thing that we had to, and like also the fact that there were funny messages that continued and changed as you failed multiple times. That was great.
Yeah.
I like the way that the GLaDOS keeps like setting you up to distrust each other and everything. Yeah.
Anyway, and then I played a bunch of World of Warcraft.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, you were saying there was some sort of new like single player hub daily quest.
Yep.
Craziness.
Been doing that. Like their gambit totally worked. Like they got me kind of back into World of Warcraft with this new patch. And I'm just doing dailies. And you know what else they did? This struck me as an extremely friendly thing. And I think this happened in the last patch, maybe in 4.1 instead of 4.2. For a while, there was you've got the thing where you queue up for the dungeon finder, and it just assembles a group and puts you in one of the instances. And every day, the first one that you did gave you a bonus in these tokens that you could trade for gear, so that people who aren't raiding can still, people who aren't in a guild, people who aren't well organized, can still like get some gear upgrades that look cool. They're not like the awesomest looking stuff, but you know, it's cool. It's got a bunch of plus staminas on it and a bunch of plus intellects.
Look like some sort of crazy clown
for your lightning bolts. So that for forever, it was like the first one of these that you do in a day gives you a big bonus. And so they're encouraging people to do this random stuff. Now you can stack them up. You can stack up a week's worth. So like you can do 7 of them. If you can only play every Saturday, you can do 7 dungeon runs on a Saturday and get the bonus as if you had done one every day. Super,
you know,
super friendly.
We really should do something like that for the Bounty Hunter Hunter.
Hey, don't be talking about a particular video game, man. This isn't the Kingdom of Loathing podcast.
But
you're right. I mean, it's like, you know, everybody out there in the blogosphere, in the video gameosphere, in the assholeosphere, in the gayosphere, let's say, you can talk smack about World of Warcraft, but like they make a lot of good decisions. They break a lot of good ground. They do a lot of things that are like, yeah, why wouldn't you do this? And now everybody will from now on. And it's like, yeah, that's the advantage of being the first person to have the opportunity to iterate on this with an audience of millions of people who will, you know, go on the forums and tell you, I'm going to quit because you did this, you assholes. And then they don't quit. They just write a bot to use more of your server resources, drink all your beer.
Fuck with your whiteboard.
What have you been playing, Kevin?
So I've been also playing Villainous, and I was playing Portal Co-op. I finally, because of the Steam sale, I finally bought the full version of Space Chem and have been playing that some and have been really enjoying it. But it gets hard as hell.
Yeah, man, it ramps fast.
You saying that it gets hard means that I'm just going to be lost in the... I'm not going to be able to finish the tutorial.
You could handle it. It's just like the multiple factories where stuff...
Wait, so you're saying I can handle this? Because I don't think I can handle this.
I think you can handle this. I think you're ready for this, Jelly. the multiple factories where, like, if you produce something too quickly in one, it isn't ready in the other one. Ugh, God, it just, like...
Yep.
Yeah.
That, you know, so when Riff was describing that in a previous podcast, I thought, you know... That's cool, but probably just... It makes everybody think, oh, that's cool, but it doesn't actually improve the game experience for anybody beyond just you thinking, oh, hey, look at how clever you are, guys who made this.
It like, requires you to think about things in a much broader...
Yeah,
sort of
it forces you to...
Does it require you to backtrack if you did too good of a job at solving a previous level? I mean,
it depends on how you think about it. Like, you sort of recognize what the most difficult problem is going to be, so you solve that one first, and you're like, okay, this took me this many sort of iterations, so now I need to provide the resources for that.
It forces you to consider the interconnectedness of the sub-puzzles rather than just working them all out individually.
Yeah, and things don't have to be perfectly aligned. They just have to be close enough that you can do enough iterations of the whole thing to solve the puzzle without the backups being so bad. I mean, in the worst case scenario, you can just create a long enough pipeline for huge backlog if you're like that worried about it.
That was how I ended up beating the third boss fight. Was just I couldn't figure out how to deal with garbage collection, so I just dumped in, just filled the entire field with pipes so that I would have enough free space to dump all the garbage into before before the thing killed me.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's a totally valid solution, you know. So so that's been pretty fun, and that's basically because I played the assignment for like a million hours because I had a lot of fun with it. So that's all I've been playing.
Hey, speaking of the assignment. Sweet, what have you been playing segment, bros?
Yeah.
Let's move on to the next segment, bros. Hey, Kevin, I'm under the impression that nothing has happened in the world.
There's been stuff, but I did not compile it because I'm a bad person.
Well,
there was a big dust cloud.
Yeah.
I'm lost without your agenda, buddy.
And I'm not going to be able to make one
I think there was still probably some more faggotry going on with Eve Online.
Was there? I haven't been following that at all. Man.
Bunch of dicks.
Some more retardedness.
Yeah. Yeah. more rage quitting, only not more. My take home from that, my impression of the way that whole situation played out is, all right, so here's a company that didn't do anything, and then their players flipped the fuck out and set a bunch of shit on fire, and then the company apologized for nothing, and then everything was okay. Cool story, bro.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the way the modern world works, right?
Hey, but you know what game was good in the 17th century? Was Deus Ex.
Oh yeah,
you played a lot more of it, I think, in the last week than I did. I only had another couple sessions before I left for my trip.
I am super excited about this game. Because I think you've played it before.
I beat it.
Yeah,
I beat it like when it came out. So.
Okay, so I had never played this game before, and like I'm really into it at this point. And
you talked about like you didn't know that there were first person shooters that that had stuff going on. And
yeah.
So you like, you were like a
Duke
person
Nukem
who thought
3D
I
was,
did not like first person shooters.
Duke Nukem 3D was the only game like this that I had ever played seriously, and I appreciated it, but I was like, you know, it was a little juvenile and like not something that I would like that I would care to play again.
And we hold no truck with the juvenile.
Of course not. No. But yeah, so this has been, it's been awesome. Like the story is really good and compelling, and like the stealthiness of it's really cool. Like, yeah, I'm super excited.
I really need to go back and play more of it. I got seriously distracted by Pistons and Minecraft. So I did not play as much of it as I should have, but I really enjoyed everything I did play.
After everything, you know what, the ladders.
Ladders are super frustrating.
They're really,
badly implemented.
Like they had not figured out ladders at that point, and it is just, it sticks out like a sore thumb in the like traversal of the world.
That is definitely a complaint that I had. But you know, I all the like little technical glitches, I just don't care about.
Yeah.
Like it. I don't even care that the graphics aren't that good, because it just doesn't
they're at least not good in a way that's tolerable. It's not like Ocarina of Time level horse shit, right? It's just like, oh look, those guys' faces are like 12 polygons instead of 1,000 polygons, and like whatever,
they were good enough. They were sufficient.
I have just been enjoying like the sheer number of secret places, and not even necessarily secret places, but like hard to get to places that like you can see them, but you're like, how do I get there? Or like, I'm not gonna go there. That's defended by a million robots and turrets and cameras and stuff like that. But if you spend enough time being all stealthy, you can totally get there. And like, yeah, it's just been great.
Did you watch that video that was posted on Rock Paper Shotgun today?
No, you linked me to it, but I haven't had a chance to look at it.
There's like a 12-minute video of Deus Ex Human Revolution. You know, and it
is that the new one?
Yeah, and it looked like. I'm like, all right, so they're clearly trying to make a modern sequel to Deus Ex that has the things that Deus Ex has. And it maybe, I don't know what it is. Like, there's a point where you have to move, like, where you can, if you have super strength and double jump or whatever, move this vending machine so that you can jump up onto a balcony to get into a part that you couldn't normally get into. And earlier, there are some guards having a conversation where they remark on, oh man, those vending machines, they're so much lighter than regular vending machines that I almost had one tip over on me earlier. Like, every NPC conversation seemed to be this just really ham-fisted clue about something that you might, and maybe the original is like that too.
No.
Like,
they are not talking about
that
the
was
mechanics
that is
of the
world only
at all.
That is the only criticism that but I mean they're not, you know, he was really just telling a story like, oh, I was trying to get this candy bar and I was pulled really hard and the vending machine almost tipped over on me because it's so light and you could totally pull it over here and use it to solve a puzzle.
What, really?
No. not that last part.
Well, sure, but that seems ridiculous.
It
They don't need to clue that
in
stuff.
Retrospect, a little silly. When you heard it, it was like, what? What? This is a weird NPC conversation.
I don't click on vending machines or cigarette machines or whatever in the world because I don't want to spend my money on bullshit in the game.
Sure.
Or in the real world. I don't know. But like, because like the first time I did it, it would like spent some of my money to buy some cigarettes, or I was like, oh, that's not what I wanted at all. But so like maybe you would clue that you could pick up stuff that way. But yeah, that seems.
I don't know. I mean, that's weird. This video, it was like, you know what? I'm gonna buy this and I'm gonna play it, like,
and see if it lives up to its own.
Like the main character looks like way more of a jackhole than the. I mean, you know, not that Neo in Deus Ex is like the coolest guy in the world, but like, yeah, I don't know. The main character in Deus Ex Human Revolution looks like kind of a douche.
So the thing that is kind of just killing me about this game is the sort of branching structure of the plot, and I don't know how branchy it gets. I'm guessing it's not like you're like going to different places based on decisions you make, but like.
No, I think it has.
The dialogue is intensely branching. I think
it definitely has like a narrative, like it has a sequence of levels that you go through
regardless and of choices.
Like, I don't think that there are any areas like what strikes me is weird, like going back to it and seeing how heavily like, all right, this is level one and then this is level two and this is level three. Like, that's weird because it's even in like a Half-Life,
mm-hmm.
which you never played. I mean, no. It's definitely divided up into segments like that, but they're not nearly as, like, crisply delineated, yeah.
Right,
well,
this
effectively has, like, loading sections between each one.
Right. Man, the fucking hallway in the UNATCO headquarters, every time I go down that hallway, and it's a loading point.
Around,
It adjusts your facing. It doesn't preserve your facing across there. And so I will usually hit that loading screen three times.
There is some weird loading screen stuff. Like, I got to the part in the this is probably a spoiler if you haven't gotten there this far, but so you might want to turn it off. But like, there's a point where you're in a hotel and you're trying to. You have the option of trying to like rescue your brother who's like being attacked by a.
So you don't
ton
know
of,
that you have
guns.
That option, right? This is the thing that like last year I learned that you could do after having played this game 10 years prior.
I remember you telling me this, a year ago. That's like if you like defend him, he'll totally be able to survive, and then we'll show up later in the game or whatever. And because you had just assumed that he was just a goner.
Yeah, I assumed that it was part of the plot that you were like, all right, he says, all right, go through that window and get in the chopper.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay.
So I, knowing that it was possible for him to survive, I went to extreme measures. I brought in some metal crates from, like, across the level, carried them with my super strength, put them in the room so that he could not be attacked by the bad guys, and then went and knocked everybody out because I'm playing relatively nonviolent. I killed the like bot guys, but then I just knocked everybody else out, which is like 30 guys. And then I removed the metal crates and like just walked him to the front of the hotel. When you get to the front doors, you can like zone out and he doesn't show up. But if you zone back in, he's there auditorily but not visually, so he will still talk to you, but he's invisible.
Oh, weird.
Because he stops right before the point where the level loading thing goes, and then it will sit there and talk to you if you come back, but he's like not there anymore. There's a bunch of weird shit like that. If you something I played with, he tells you the code to the subway, and if you go back, if you have a save game where you go through the subway before it's possible for you to know what the code was, and you go to like where they basically set up an ambush for you. You get there and like all the characters like run up to you, but they're all still friendly, so they just stop. So like there's a bunch of places where like just like NPCs will just like run up to you and then just stop. It's really kind of funny because like the game is trying to solve, you know, do its logic, but it fails. I was hoping that we would have more chance to play and explore it more, because like I kind of wanted us to choose different options for dealing with the branching points and see.
Yeah, Riff, did you get to the point where you're in the airplane?
I did not get that far. No,
oh, okay.
I'm at the I'm at the, where my save game is I'm at the airfield looking at the chopper.
Okay.
Basically.
All right.
Because in the air, there's a branch point in the airplane that I was not even aware was a branch point.
Yeah. So you can, like, when you are confronting the hostage or whatever that you've been given the assignment to assassinate, you can kill him. You can not kill him and run away, at which point Anna will kill him. You can kill Anna, or you can try to, like, not kill either of them. Which I don't think the game really recognizes that. I think it just assumes that if you don't kill either of them, she will kill him, whether you're on the screen or not. And then you can kill her and then kill him. So, like, there's a bunch of options there.
And they don't seem to change the plot progression. They just change the dialogue.
Yeah, I mean,
when you go into Manderly's office after that.
And if she's not in the game, she can't. She comes up to you, like, there's places where you see her later in the game and she's not there, so that's a place where it's different for sure.
All right.
Yeah, so I was just kind of curious to see if how that would play out on two different playthroughs.
You know, in thinking about the way that the sort of web of possibilities spreads out in that game, we could do that, right? Like, we could write all of that stuff. And it's like, not, it's complicated, but it's not that complicated. But thinking about the scale of doing that and then having voice actors recording every line of every possibility, right? And then 4 weeks later when you're like, oh, fuck, I forgot something. And then having to have them come back in and record a single line that you, like, needed to put in
you don't voice all the dialogue in a thing. You just do cutscenes that you know are not going to be.
Man, I hope the Old Republic does not suffer greatly as a result of that. Like, that's going to be a mess.
It's tough because BioWare is like, they like to voice things, right?
They do. And
we'll see.
People like it, and I'm not sure that that translates to this. Yeah, I don't know.
You know, until we get a chance to play it, it's hard to know.
Everybody always poo-poos the future before it's the future.
And if they do it perfectly,
once it becomes the present, they're like, well, of course, this is the present. So
you were talking today about how you think screen resolution is a solved problem.
No, I was. I just said, because, listen, like, my phone, I have an iPhone 4 with the Retina display. That, like, if you make a higher resolution screen, I won't notice, right? Because we were just talking about an iPad. You were talking about a buddy of ours that bought an iPad, and I was like, ah, oh, God, I wish I had waited to buy an iPad until it had a Retina display, because Retina display, practically infinite resolution. And you came up with some photography fag way of conceiving of a better display.
I feel like you can make arbitrary increases to sort of how good things look, you know, because, like, even though the pixels are too small for you to see, they still probably have to break them up into four different regions and use R, G, and B, different pixels and stuff like that. But so you could, like, have dozens of different colors or something, or, you know, you get the pixels small enough, you have a million colors available, addressable at each sort of quasi-pixel location or whatever, you know, who knows.
But does that make a difference to the person who's looking at it and has a layman's eye?
Better than any photograph or painting you've ever seen, probably.
Okay.
Right? Like, that'll be cool.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so next assignment. I think what we decided on was, because it exists for Mac and is, like, a couple bucks on Steam now and seems to be, like, a halfway fun game, is that we're going to do Horde, H-O-A-R-D.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Riff, buy Horde. I played the demo and it was fun, and I was like, you know, I probably wouldn't pay $10 for this.
I got it for $3.
Yeah.
I don't know if it'll be that cheap when you hear this, but it's almost definitely going to be on sale. So just go to Steam and check it out.
Yeah, it's a game where you.
What kind
it's
of
like
thing
a,
is it?
It is like a very, very simple real time strategy where you're a dragon that's flying around pillaging villages and collecting treasure, and yeah, it's, you know,
okay,
it's a thing.
Very, very simple RTS. One of these days, we got to do Team Fortress 2, guys.
Yep.
We have to.
Yeah.
That's true.
We have to.
Now that
it's free,
which I don't understand what that means. It's free to play, which means you can just download it for free.
Yeah.
You
know? But I mean, we all already own it,
sure,
so it doesn't matter. But It's just one of those things, like, where you are a nerd like us, and so you go into a, you go and you try to do something, and there's all these people who already know how to do it, and they're like, fuck you, nerd, you don't know how to do this.
Can we not play on a private room in a private server?
I don't know, maybe we can. Maybe we'll figure it out. Maybe we'll have a video games hot dog server.
Yeah.
Where it's, all right, you're not allowed to come in here and pwn us if you if you know what you're doing with these games. Hey guys, let's take a little bit of a break and then do some reader mail and then be done with this here video games hot dog.
Cool.
Number 13.
Okay. Dun dun dun.
Hey, so how about some reader mail? Let's see. Mythman 611 says, Jick, as the guy that called you Zach, as the guy that called you old last time, if you don't consider yourself old yet, I can't wait to see how crotchety you are when you do. But I digress.
Yeah, he's got multiple crotches.
Would you guys ever consider doing a Let's Play? Knowing you guys, it would be interesting to see your views on a game and a hilarious event of you cracking jokes.
I don't know. I don't know if
I
have the improvisational skills to pull that off.
Is it improvisational, or is it just endurance and,
stamina, I think. Because
those things are long and...
Well, yeah,
you know,
that's true.
We talk about, MST3K. Those are pretty scripted things where they've watched it, dozens of times, you know?
It was really weird. We did a seminar kind of thing with the Mystery Science Theater guys, and the way that they... write that stuff was extremely surprising to me, and we asked them, like, is this how you did it during the Mystery Science, because they were talking about riff tracks, but it was like, is this how you did it during the Mystery Science Theater days, because this seems fucking weird. Like, they divide the thing up into 15-minute segments, and they each take 15-minute segments and write all of the jokes, and then the way they determine who says what is who has not talked recently.
Yeah.
And, like, they don't, there were no unifying, sort of, like, it didn't seem to be like, oh, this sounds like a thing that Crow would say, or this sounds like a thing that Tom's, it was weird.
Yeah, it was,
and
it was
like,
I
asked him, like, do you guys write for each other's voices, or does it just accidentally, and he was like, no, not really. Like, I was like, huh, that's
very strange.
I don't know how I feel about that. Anyway, he says, second, I weep for your inability to play Psychonauts, but have you played any other Double Fine games that have come out recently, like Stacking or Trenched? I played Costume Quest. Seriously, Zach, I weep for you every time I hear that you can't seem to finish that game. Seriously, hire somebody to play it for you or something. Tim Schafer suggested that if I had kids.
That's a great story.
Because this is another story of me meeting a game designer that I really admire. And then, like, yeah, Psychonauts, man, that was fucking hard. I couldn't play it because it was too hard. And he was like, do you have any kids? Maybe you could have them play it for you. And I was like, fuck you, Tim Schafer. I'm gonna walk. Thanks for all the tequila, because I'm at your event where I get free tequila for some reason.
That was so great.
And then we watched Guar.
Yeah,
that was the worst show.
I don't know. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I enjoyed watching. Okay. I had never seen Guar before, so that was worth seeing.
Yeah, one of these days we'll do Psychonauts.
I've got it on PlayStation.
And can you play Psychonauts on a Mac?
I think it's just console, right? Is it?
I think it does now, yeah.
Yeah.
Doesn't it exist on the PC?
I don't know. I've only ever seen it on the console.
Yeah, I wonder if it exists as a Mac game, too. Franz von Bellen says, hey, let's get... Last episode, there was a lot of love for certain story-driven deep RPG/FPS games and a single mention of System Shock 2. This makes me wonder if any of you guys ever played the first System Shock. It's got a lot in common with Deus Ex. It's easily obtainable if you Google for System Shock Portable, and really deserves to be played. It's also got a lot of features you guys claim to have been introduced by Marathon 2, while System Shock was released slightly before Marathon 1. I do recommend installing some mods first, mapping the controls, and adding mouse like a very useful. Long story short, I like what you guys are doing, but you should play more System Shock. Yeah, I just don't know anything about System Shock 1. I remember looking at it years ago and thinking, wow, this is gross. These graphics are gross. I haven't decided whether I want to play it or not. I want to puke.
I'm excited by this whole genre. You know, I think we'll have to sprinkle it in among other types of games.
You can see all this. You can see all this potential now because you finally played something that was good.
Ah, Deus Ex, man.
So there's some other, there's some stuff in the forum that I wanted to get to. You guys should vamp on some imaginary reader mail while I'm looking through this stuff.
Oh, there's a mail here.
Thanks, Kevin, for saying how cute Liv is.
I think you've got some female followers.
Let's see. This guy tells me something. Mikey C says, thanks for reading out my letter a few podcasts ago. I would have written in and said hi before, but I was stuck in the rural part of eastern Turkey looking for someone I know who had gone missing. As I sat in a waiting room next to a dude who had leaned a bulletproof vest against his window in case somebody misfired on the nearby military training ground, I listened to episode 10 and chuckled to myself, wondering how the fuck I got there. Thought you might like to know that your podcast has traveled that far. In the meantime, I've begun drawing up plans for Sweet Segment Bros, a 2D platformer set in Hot Dog Kingdom, where two intrepid podcasters attempt to save their cross-dressing/bisexual friend from an evil 3DS that's low on battery. Wow. I'll let you know how development gets on. Ta-ta for now. I think they confused the two of us.
That is a great listener mail right there. Yeah. That's fantastic.
Okay, so here's a guy who tries to shed some light. Angelo Butera, whose last name is very close to the chemical that makes your balls smell like balls.
Butyrol?
Yeah.
Oh, that's not what you use to power lighters?
I've noticed you talking about the Eve protests, and I wanted to shed some light on why exactly the riots were going on. About 2 years ago, microtransactions were discussed, and CCP made a statement that said there would never be microtransactions in EVE. CCP has long had the stance that everything in the economy would be player-built and driven. Then they turned around and said, yes, we're implementing microtransactions, but only for vanity items. This made people nervous, but was generally accepted. Then the $70 monocle was released, which was a WTF, but still was okay. Then an internal document was released stating the intent to release ships, modules, and ammo available only for real-life money that would be the most powerful available. This caused an uproar because this was against everything CCP had previously stated. In response to this uproar, an email from the CEO of the company was leaked, essentially saying, ignore the feedback of the community, it doesn't matter. In response, the players rioted and partially shut down 3 of the over 7,000 systems.
But they were, like, important systems.
Yeah, I'm going to come back to that.
Okay.
After a week, they called an emergency meeting of the player government, flew them to Iceland, and released a statement, basically that cash shop items would be vanity only. They could have released that one sentence and averted the whole crisis. That's all the players want. We'll buy $70 monocles. We just don't want to pay to win. Just wanted to provide a player's opinion on the events. So, right, they shut down 3 of the 7,000 systems, but they were the 3 systems that new players spawn in, which made it impossible for them to...
Well, and, like, you know, those are, like, the important trading hubs and stuff. Like right. the central systems are way, way more critical than any of the exterior ones from, you know... Like,
sure.
I don't actually play EVE, so I'm sort of talking on my ass. But, yeah, I mean, I still think the whole thing is interesting... From an outside perspective.
It is. I mean, I'm still trying to find the part of the story where CCP did something wrong. And don't get me wrong, I hate those jackasses. God.
They're like so nice. I like them. They're like... You just hate kilts,
I do. I do. We got into the elevator in this building. So as always happens when we come to San Diego, we get a condo downtown so that we can sort of base the company here for the time that it takes to exhibit at Comic-Con and get out of the heat for a month and then go home. And we always end up in these condos that are filled with douches, and they're just like, hey, fratty fratty douche man, and with my tiny dog and my whatever, my popped collar. My frosted tips. Yes, it is. So yesterday we get into the elevator to go down and go out to lunch or whatever. A guy gets into the elevator who is like, looks kind of like Modest Yahoo, and he's still got the tiny dog, but he's wearing a kilt and has the sort of like, I have not cut my hair or shaved in 5 years kind of beard. Like,
huh.
Has crazy long hair and, like, the mustache that completely shrouds the mouth because it's, like, a 6-inch long mustache that is not... I was like, what the fuck are you doing in this building? Like, you didn't... you weren't in a frat, or if you were in a frat, you were in like some crazy Hasidic frat that wasn't a real, you know, it wasn't a real frat. It was just like, oh, we might as well be a frat because we're all a bunch of Hasids. That's what they call themselves, right? Hasids. It was like, all right, so now instead of wearing a hat and having the curls to just sort of technically follow these rules, I'm just fucking doing it. I'm going to grow my hair out and my beard for 5 years. And like, what the fuck? Now you just look like a weird caveman wearing a kilt and walking like a toy poodle. Like, what
that's weird.
Hell world have we sidestepped into?
That's odd. But, you know, maybe he's just like taking the hipster thing to the next level.
Anyway, these Eve guys, these kilts, like, I still don't understand what they did wrong. Right. If they said,
well, the leaking was weird, right? But they were clearly considering going back on some statements that they'd made and that were held very important by the player base, right? Like, that's kind of sketchy. Like, you know, we have had discussions where we're like, should we do this thing? And we're always like, no, that's kind of sketchy. Let's just not do that thing, right? And so, like,
well, so sure.
If the discussion had gotten out there without our conclusion to
right.
not do
and,
it,
and this is like a larger question of like, you know, okay, like WikiLeaks, like here's a point that I would like to make. The game that you started playing and you love is a result of the developers
sure.
changing their mind about 1,000 things on 1,000 different occasions and resulting in a thing that exists and is good and that you enjoy. Right. So to suddenly say like, all right, you're not allowed to so you're balancing this against it is also bad to break promises to your customers. Right. So where do you go with that? And I mean, I think the leak aspect of this is interesting, right? Because it's like, I don't want our customers to be able to read my thoughts
or your emails. I mean,
but I mean, at some point, right? Like, I do want my customers to be able to read my forum posts,
right.
But I don't want them to be able to read my emails or my thoughts.
Sure.
Sometimes I'm thinking about having sex with them.
Right.
I mean, it depends on the customer, but
right, right.
Sometimes I am. I'm a large enough man to admit that. I mean, large enough, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know that there are any internal asymmetric publications.
You know, just talking about all the players
leaked,
that
would
we
cause
hate.
A scandal. Because I mean, we're fairly like, you know,
players super stupid.
Yeah. And Riff constantly saying, "Nah, the player base is super stupid." Yeah. But we also are pretty upfront with talking about the individual
true.
Players that we hate, and we'll do so publicly, right? So I mean, it's this thing, right? Like this kind of ties back to the beginning of the show. Like, I remember working with dudes who I was like, hey, all right, you know, we're coworkers, we're friends, we're buddies, right? Like we've got some things that are in common. But guys who like they abhorred the idea of hanging out outside of work. And
with you in particular or
just
with coworkers?
With coworkers.
Okay.
And it was because and I finally at one of a handful of parties that actually happened where we did hang out outside of work, they said, you know, we're totally different. Like, I am a totally different person at home than I am at work. And that idea was so alien to me. And I was like, this is why my career is going nowhere. Like, there is this fundamental thing that most people have where they are okay with being a totally different person at work than they are at home. That this is how people are able to just, like, kiss the boss's ass.
To, like, separate their lives into two whole sections.
And I'm like, okay, like this kind of makes some sense now. And instead of like, I'm going to learn how to do this, I thought, I have to not have a job anymore or I'm never going to be happy again. Because fuck that. Like, if you are spending 8 hours a day pretending to be somebody else, like, you're spending 8 hours a day not living your own fucking life. And like, fuck that. Other people can do that. Other people can be happy with that, but not me. So, like, whatever. I'm going to constantly undermine my own career by being totally honest with my boss. If the boss says, hey, do this, I'm like, that doesn't make any fucking sense. And you know, now the guys that work for me, that when I say do this, they say that doesn't make any sense, and I say, fuck you, do it anyway, and they say, there's no reason for doing that, and I said, I'm the guy paying you and I said so, and they say, that's not a good reason, and I say, fuck you, yes it is. I'm like, oh my god, what have I become? Here's what I've become. I've become the kind of guy that hires guys like I was. And you know what? I was pretty cool back then. I might not have been the best employee in the world, but, like, I was a cool dude.
He wasn't afraid of anything.
No, I wrote programs and wasn't afraid of anything. And are you going to do?
Yeah, that's a good question.
But, like, do we have internal memos that if they were leaked, they would flip our player shit? I don't think so.
We're not nearly
as big an operation as they are.
That's true.
I think we are philosophically equivalent on some levels, but we are, you know, I mean, they probably have 5 to 10 times as many employees as we have.
Oh,
right?
At Eve, it's like 300 or 400 people, I think.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's a lot of people. They're also working on they've got multiple campuses
big,
and stuff.
They've got multiple big teams working on multiple big projects. But I mean, they're still like, you know, they are 20 times as big as we are, but not 1,000.
They have like an entire building in Iceland.
Yeah, is it a sweet building?
It's pretty cool.
You went to Iceland. You got me a shirt, and I didn't even read the tag. That was why it was funny. And then you don't remember why it was funny. So really, it was a terrible gift.
Well, it wasn't funny. It was just appropriate.
Okay.
It was like I am a big important man, but in some sort of Icelandic iconography.
I'm glad you think of me that way, Kevin.
Yeah.
I am kind of a big important man.
Yes, and
hey, Riff, do you have any reader mail? I think we can be about done with the show. It's a little shorter than they normally are, but we're also a little more technically confused than we normally are,
and
more
drunk.
Yeah, and there's some worrisome shit going on this screen with the peaks. I'm gonna have to see what's. All right, Riff needs to go to bed. So, hey, thanks for listening to Video Games Hot Dog episode number 13, everybody. It's been a real
adventure.
You know what? I am allergic to insincerity. It has been a fucking pleasure.
I agree.
It has been a joy delivering this show to you people.
It's been fun.
I've had the time of my life. And you know what? My life has led up to this point. Like, this is the most recent time in my life, and this was the time of my life.
Have you never felt this way before?
I don't think I have. And I swear.
It's the truth.
I owe it all to
you. See you guys.
The listeners.
That's
thanks,
sweet.
Guys. And good night, everybody.
Have a great week, everyone.
Sure.
Yeah, so, all right, so Kevin's got some annoying stuff.